89.7 FM, Eastside Radio.
Hi, I'm Leo Metzger, and this is Metzger Interviews. It's a great thrill to be joined by Eric McCusker, a renowned songwriter, producer, guitarist, a member of Mondo Rock, and more recently McCusker and Mason and The Dream Room. I'm a lover of Mondo Rock, so Eric, it's a real pleasure to have you on. Thank you for coming.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Leo.
We're broadcasting here from Eastside Radio. As I understand it, you're a Sydney Eastern Suburbs boy.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in Dublin, but from age five, I grew up in Bronte and Bronte Public School and Willara and Sydney High. It's kind of education, yeah.
And you're in Melbourne now.
I moved in Melbourne at the beginning of 1979. I joined the Captain Matchbox Whoopee Band and played with them for a year. And they were Melbourne-based, and I've just stayed here ever since.
Well, I'm interested with the Eastern Suburbs, when you were playing in bands, Mondo Rock would have toured here, obviously, at the pub circuit. What were the venues here to play?
Well, the Lifesaver was a favourite venue, really, in Bondi Junction, classic Australian venue from that era. Bondi Lifesaver, it's one of the best venues ever, and we were all terribly disappointed when it closed down.
When you began, you were in your first band in Bondi Road with Rene Geyer.
Yeah. There was a band called Dry Red, which was when I was still at Sydney. I had a little band, and then we played at a party, and this girl got up and sang with us. It was just incredible. That was Renee Gass. We were both 16, and then we formed a band and ended up getting this residency at a place called the Cask Wine Bar in Bondi Road, and played there for about 6 months during my last year at high school. I probably shouldn't have been there because I just think I was too young. It was a really good band. That was the first time, you know, we had built up a real following, and we had wild nights there. It was incredible.
And who were your, at that point in time, your musical influences?
Lots of stuff. Mid-60s Brit blues scene and Cream and Hendrix. Renee already had a deep love and affiliation with R&B. She turned us onto a lot of stuff. But I was listening to bands like Traffic and Zeppelin and Pink Floyd.
89.7 FM, Eastside Radio.
Well, also in the East, Come Said the Boy was filmed at Maroubra Beach on the steps there. Was that because of your background here that you chose that location?
Well, it's funny because in my head, that song takes place at Bronte Beach, but for some reason, the logistics of the filming or the permission we could get to use worked better at Maroubra. And, you know, it could almost be Bronte if you look at it, but it just worked out that way.
What are your memories of that recording session for the video?
It was very interesting. I don't know if you've realised, but it was almost done in one take, all of the stuff with the band and with Ross and me and stuff, one continuous take. I mean, by the time we'd got all of the camera angles and everything rehearsed, we'd had three full takes, and the light was starting to go. And just as we shot the last take, the lights came on, and it was like dusk, and the lights came on the beach, and they looked really fantastic. We had to get it basically right in that take. It was a really elaborately choreographed. It probably doesn't seem like it, but everything had to be the cameras there, the tracking moves, and then we'd get up and go to the car and drive away at the end. The thing I love about that is I think Ross is really fantastic in it. His acting to the camera while he's singing and miming is really stunning.
The one take wonder, basically.
Yeah. You know, like a lot of male singers, he never sings the same thing exactly the same way more than, you know, twice. And so he had to really, really learn every bit of phrasing, because if you're watching those things and the close-up was right on him, his phrasing and his lips synchronization, they were really under the microscope, and he did a great job.
He did. You didn't get heckled by the bra boys while you were filming?
That didn't exist in 1983.
All right. Well, that's good.
I don't think.
Eastside Radio.
You mentioned that you moved to Melbourne for the Captain Matchbox Whoopee Band. And then it was in 1980 that you joined Ross Wilson with Mondo Rock. Is that because he had re-outfitted the band and incorporated you into a new version of it?
Yeah, he'd had an earlier version and done one record called Primal Park. And interestingly, when I first moved to Melbourne, I shared a house with my good buddy Wilbur Wild and a guy called Simon Gillies, who was then bass player of that first version of Mondo Rock. So I used to go and see Mondo Rock quite often because Simon could get me in, and I was interested in the music they were doing. And Ross got disillusioned with that lineup and basically started from the ground up again. And I heard about this and I tested him, really. I auditioned three times, and I wasn't quite convinced about the guitar playing, I don't think. But then I gave him a bunch of songs that I'd been writing, and he sort of realized that when you have a band going, it's great to have more than one songwriter, because the more songs you write, the more fussy you can be, and it's quite difficult for one person to generate a whole band's material.
I've seen you say in the past that part of the reason you stepped up as the real prominent songwriter was because Ross Wilson had gone through that real peak creative phase in the 70s with Daddy Cool and his bands. And then you were a bit younger than Ross. By 1980 with Mondo Rock, you were starting to go through that same creative period.
Purple Patch.
So I'm interested in your thoughts on that, because it's not dependent on age. I mean, it's a mental thing, songwriting. Why do songwriters go through a peak creative moment?
It's sort of psychic energy, I think. But, I mean, mathematicians famously peak in their early 20s. Most mathematicians have their best work when they're at that stage. I know when I was that age, which is 25 or something when I joined Mondo Rock, I was just everything. You know, that was my whole life. You know, I didn't have a girlfriend really. I mean, but I wasn't living with anyone. So that was completely my main thing. And I'd been a professional musician for about 6 years by that stage. I'd studied medicine for a couple of years before that, and then played with a succession of people in Sydney, John English and Ross Ryan and Stevie Wright and Jeff St. John. But I'd just started writing. I guess I'd started writing in about 1970. So it was just everything. That was just my whole world, really, whole interest, and desperately trying to find a situation where my songs could be used. You know, you can sit in a bedroom and write songs, but to be presented with a situation where your songs actually get recorded and played and put out, it was just everything I really wanted. And after that, you know, make some money, and that's distracting, and maybe you get married, and that's distracting.
Yeah.
And you never quite have it at the absolute pinnacle of your priorities anymore. But I think it's also a psychic energy of just being at your brightest and most productive.
Yeah. I heard David Foster say he thinks songwriters pull songs from another ether and they're able to sort of channel it. So perhaps in that moment where you've got no other distractions, you can hear where it should go. Oh, it's a hard thing to put into words. Yeah,
it is. And it's funny because you don't think of David Foster as being sort of airy-fairy kind of a guy, but the process of songwriting feels very strange, and it's hard to explain, but there is a feeling that you're an antenna and catching ideas that are floating around. And I just think it's probably the same with sportsmen. I mean, most sportsmen would be peaking in their mid-20s too, and I'm not sure why that is. But it's definitely, you look at it, I mean, even people like Burt Bacharach, they wrote most of the hits before he was 35. And then it seemed to dry up, even though he was full of ideas. Quite puzzling. But most songs are written by people in their 20s. Most hit songs are written by people in their 20s.
Such a fascinating thing. Yeah, I'm sure someone in Sydney Uni is doing a thesis on that now.
Yeah, probably.
89.7 FM.
Some of the songs that you wrote for Mondo Rock were State of the Heart, Chemistry, No Time, Come Said the Boy, and Summer of 81. What was the process of writing Summer of 81?
I had a dream, and I didn't dream the song, but I had this vision in my mind. It was a strange dream of catching the plane from Melbourne to Sydney and then turning around and saw that like a mushroom cloud over Melbourne, and then there was one over Sydney, and you can even see in the distance Brisbane as if the Third World War had started. And so we were stuck in this plane. And that was the image. Now, that's not what the song ended up being. That wasn't the scene of the song. The scene of the song was me being at my dad's house at Bronte Beach, where I grew up, which is one back from Bronte Marine Parade on the north side of Bronte. And we just had a balcony, and we had this floor-to-ceiling glass windows. And it was just imagining, if you got the phone call, that rockets were on the way or were about to happen, what you want to do in that last time. So, yeah, it's quite bleak in a way. But that was the starting point of the song. And you start writing a song and you get an idea, and then what comes out in some ways is random, in some ways is from your subconscious, and it's quite hard to explain. I don't think it took very long to write that song. I mean, State of the Heart only took about 20 minutes to write once I got the initial idea, which was on a tram, and I didn't have a notebook on me or a tape recorder, so I sprinted home from the tram and ran into my house and wrote it down and recorded it on my little tape recorder.
And do you record from your guitar?
Usually, yeah. I mean, Come Said the Boy was written, I just got a Tascam Porter Studio four-track machine, and I had a little synthesizer and I had a bass. So that was almost written to a primitive track as I was generating the track. The song came. I mean, sometimes the songs, you're just walking around and get things. I've learned to try and drop everything, even in my family, you know. I'll be eating dinner and go, hey, hang on a second, running away to try and get an idea down. Because it's like trying to remember a dream. You think, oh, I'll never possibly forget this, but you do when you get the inspiration. Often it'll start with a flash of inspiration or an idea. But some songs, I mean, Come Said the Boy probably took about 3 weeks to write, but that was mainly because I got most of it in the first night or two of writing, and then it just took me a long time to solve the middle section. Quite complex.
It's like a puzzle.
Yeah, sometimes it's mosaic work and sometimes it's solving puzzles. And typically you might get two-thirds of a song in the first brainstorm, but then finishing it. These days I always try and write a last verse. You write two verses. No, it's good. I've done enough work for the night. And you walk away and then you can never recapture the state of mind again.
And a song like Summer of 81, I mean, I hear the piano is such a strong part of that. What was the process once you had the idea in your head? How did you translate that to the full instrumentation?
Well, often I would record my own little home demo. Maybe I don't think I had a Porter Studio in that stage, but I'd usually go and record some demos just at a little demo studio, and then I'd bring it to the band and play it to them, and I'd maybe have recorded six or seven songs and they'd end up choosing two. And then the band often would demo the song. And that's great. That's a really enjoyable part of the process, because when you're doing demos, you're not trying to be too neat, not trying to be too polished, not trying to be too finished product. And so you can just try ideas and then you live with that for a while and you play it. This is the ideal situation. You go out and play live and see what works. And, you know, if you see them falling asleep in your pre-chorus, then you know you've got a problem and you fix it. So by the time it came around to getting into the studio to actually do something, we had a pretty strong idea of what the parts were. I mean, James Black, who played keyboards the first 5 years of Mondo Rock, who's a masterful musician, very good guitar player as well, he'd work. I remember him going, when we were recording the Chemistry album, we were working one of the studios, and then there was the mobile studio parked out the back, and he was in there just working on his keyboard parts. Very hard working and lots of ideas.
89.7 FM, Eastside Radio.
Well, you've more recently formed a songwriting partnership with Jake Mason. So that was in 2010. You formed McCusker and Mason. Many people would know him from having written This Girl by Cooking on Three Burners. And you're both based in Melbourne and have written for a lot of notable artists.
Yeah, Jake's a keyboard player and producer. I don't do so much production. I'm more lyrics and guitars and the composition side. I'm not a studio buff by any means. I did it for a while, but writing lyrics is incredibly demanding. It takes an enormous amount of time. So Jake and I have complementary skills and we enjoy working together very much. Terrific working relationship.
Working with Jake, have you noticed a change in the style of songs that you write now?
There has been. I mean, there's a lot of the stuff that Jake and I have done, it sort of has a retro element, whereas I guess when we were doing Mondo Rock, it didn't have that. I mean, it may seem like that now, but it wasn't at the time. I mean, we wrote a song called Soul A Go Go because there was a radio show down here on PBS FM called Soul A Go Go. And so he wrote a piece of music and I wrote a lyric to that. And it ended up being on a soul sampler in London by a guy who's got the top soul show on BBC. So we're a bit more rootsy, I think, now, and maybe a bit more retro. But we also try lots of different stuff.
Eastside Radio.
In 2021, you launched a new band called The Dream Room, and that's comprised of Rick Petropoulos, Nikki Nichols, and Fallon Williams. How did that band come to be formed?
Oh, we ended up, Rick and I, we had a mutual friend, Alex Formosa, and we were just sort of one of Alex's gigs and going, gee, we'd like to play some funk. So we just formed a little funk cover band called Jam the Funk. And that then morphed into The Dream Room, which is more of a rock thing. And that we haven't done much with The Dream Room in the last year. We made a record and it's very interesting being in my age group, my audience. They mainly don't want to hear new material, which is kind of, you know, you've probably heard this complaint before, but a lot of the places to play in our demographic are cover bands with a theme. They'd buy the tribute bands, or there'll be soul bands or funk bands. So it was easy to get work as a funk band. Mm. But then once we started doing our original stuff, it became harder to get work. It's a conundrum because, you know, I still like to write and I still like to keep moving forward, but it's quite difficult to find a market.
Yeah. Well, you wrote the song from that debut album. The album was What the Moon Believes.
Yeah.
And this, one of the songs you wrote was Bumping Into Memories, which is described as the sequel to Come Said the Boy. And I think that's a really nice example. I've heard you say that genres shouldn't exist in separation. Come Said the Boy and Bumping Into Memories, if you listen to them together, they're quite different styles of song.
Yeah.
But they do flow into each other.
Yeah, and it was just writing the song, and then it occurred to me that the scenario was as if the two protagonists, who are always fictitious anyway, and this is the interesting thing people find hard to accept, writing lyrics is like writing fiction short stories. While there may be bits and pieces that are based on your real life, it is still an act of imagination. And I just imagine when I was writing this song that the two protagonists, the girl and the boy, and Come Said the Boy, would meet up again in later life, or he's tempted to get together with her again.
Those two actors from the Come Said the Boy music video, do you know what happened to them?
Very interesting. I went to a reunion at Sydney High, and the lady who was taking us around came up to me and asked me about Mondo Rock, and she said she'd been the teacher of the girl whose last name was Mikhailovich, I think. Can't remember her first name. And she came to school and asked for permission because she'd been doing some acting and she got cast in this thing. And she said, can I have a couple of days off to film this film clip? And she said, yeah, don't worry about school, go and do it. And she ended up having quite a successful modelling career and went over to Europe and modelled in Italy for a while. I don't know what's happened to her since. I hope she's well. I believe she's still around.
Yeah, probably bumping into memories doing all that.
89.7 FM.
And I hear you're working on a musical at the moment about Ava Gardner.
Yeah, the project I've been working on for 10 or 20 years called Ava at the End of the World, and it's about when she came to Melbourne in 1959. Did a work-in-progress performance about 8 years ago, but I've now written it up into a full stage musical, written the script with a guy called Larry Buttrose, and Jake helped me with some of the songs, and his musical director, Jake Mason. And we've had some very strong interest from one of the state theatre companies, so that's hopefully something that will happen in a couple of years, and a very interesting project to do. I think it's good. It's called Ava at the End of the World.
Ava at the End of the World. We'll make sure to go and see it.
89.7 FM, Eastside Radio.
I've got a question that I like to ask songwriters. What is one of your favourite songs that's written by another composer?
There's a million. I often say Strawberry Fields, but I was just having a YouTube jag on a guy called Gene McDaniels, who had hits in the early 60s, Tower of Strength and Chip, Chip, Chipping Away, but ended up being a songwriter. And he wrote a great song called Compared to What? Have you ever heard that song?
I haven't. I'll go and listen.
It was a hit jazz song around when I was about 16 by Les McCann and Eddie Harris from a live album called Swiss Movement. But then it was also recorded by Roberta Flack that sold millions. And he also wrote another hit for her called Feel Like Making Love. That's the time I feel like making love. Mm. So I'll go for today. Gene McDaniels, Compared to What? Great political song.
And is there a song of yours from your own catalogue that satisfies you the most when you listen to it?
Well, I really like the one that John Farnham put on Whispering Jack, which was No One Comes Close. That kind of is a late song for me in terms of my 80s career. And it took a long time to write, about 6 months to write. And I think that's a very moving song and satisfying to me. There's a nice version live on the tour he did with Olivia Newton-John. So, yeah, No One Comes Close, John Farnham.
Is it the production value that really clicked for you?
Well, no, not so much. I just think the song is really good. I say to people, writing a hit song isn't rocket science or brain surgery. It's much harder than either of those things. It really is. You know, it's not easy to do. I just read Burt Bacharach's thing, and he would really sweat on his songs and take a long time and not be able to get to sleep at night and... It is kind of like that, but I just think No One Comes Close puts it together in terms of progression. The chord progression is good, the way the ideas and the story progresses too.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for this chat. It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Leah. Thanks for your interest. 89.7 FM.